Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Terrence Howard. My mother was the cornerstone of our family. She shaped me as an actor, a musician, as a human being. So when she was diagnosed with colon cancer, it was like our whole family got cancer. And she died when she was only 56, so this is personal. Now hopefully my heartbreak is your wake-up call. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer, but you can prevent this disease. Screening finds precancerous polyps so that they can be removed before they turn into cancer. I've been screened. If you think that you're at an increased risk like I am, ask your doctor when to start screening. And if you're 50 or older, get screened. I don't have my mother anymore. So please, do everything that you can to stay around for yourself and for your family. Screening saves lives.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Good morning, and welcome to the second half of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. I'm your host, Joy Keyes. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. You can follow me on Twitter.com/Joy Keyes, and you can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. Also, send me an email. I would love to hear from you. My email address is SaturdaysWithJoyKeyes@hotmail.com. First, I just want to say thank you to all the listeners for your support, past 650,000 downloads of the podcast. Thank you, thank you, and thank you. I hope you have enjoyed the shows and learned something and shared with friends and family. Well, today we are trying to continue our streak with some great talent and educating people about information in the world, because we cannot know everything. We always have something to learn. And this guy, he is always trying to teach somebody something. Byron Hurt is a New York-based producer of the award-winning documentary and underground classic, I Am a Man, Black Masculinity in America and Moving Memories, the Black Senior Video Yearbook. Today we're going to be talking about his film, Soul Food Junkies, and also his new film that he's working on and hoping to get produced is Hazing, How Badly Do You Want It? Soul Food Junkies premiered in January on Independent Lens, and I've been tweeting the link, and you can check that out. His films and work have been used in college campuses and schools across the country. He's been on numerous TV shows, magazines, you name it, he's probably been on it. And I think this is him on the line right now, calling from 516. Good morning, Byron.
Hey, good morning, Joy.
Good morning.
How are you?
Hi, how are you? Thanks for calling in.
I'm doing very well. I'm happy to be on your show and excited to talk to you.
So, like, why are you making me hungry early in the morning? We're talking about soul food.
Well, you know what? My film has the tendency to do that to people, you know, when they're watching the film. So it's always interesting to hear people talk about the film when they finish watching it, because, you know, the film has some really beautiful images of soul food while also sort of deconstructing it at the same time. So it's one of those films that really makes you feel a wide range of emotions when you're watching it.
Well, I want to mention that I just want to say thank you, and I feel actually honored to watch the film, mainly because you are so open about your relationship with your father and his path that he led in his life and in relation to food. I mean, that was very brave, I think, of you. It was very intimate. I felt like a little peephole. I was looking at a little peephole in your house, and then you were talking about your family. You know, I welled up at different points. And then when I found out, you know, your father died, and I was like, oh, my God, it's like my dad died or something crazy. You know, I just was like, you sucked me in, man. You sucked me in there.
Well, I mean, you know, that's really what I wanted to do as a filmmaker, you know, to tell a story that people are going to connect with and identify with. And I think personal stories are a good way to effectively reach people, not just in the mind, but in the heart. You know, and as a communicator, and I consider myself to be a communicator, you know, I always try and figure out the most effective way of reaching people. And because this film was so personal to me, you know, these were issues that I was dealing with, you know, within my family, you know, I thought it was, you know, the best thing to do was to share it, you know, with people in the hopes that it would impact people and influence people in a positive way.
Well, definitely. I mean, I think that is why it is successful, because I got sucked in listening to the personal story, but around the personal story, you have a lot of wonderful historical information and talking about racial discrimination, institutional racism, and you go back all the way to slavery. For the people who are not familiar with the film, you go all the way back to, you know, slave times. You go to the 60s. You go to now. Today we talk about food deserts. So you break it down to different time eras throughout the history of the U.S. And so it makes it digestible, if you will, for people, no matter how old you are, because the young people can relate to McDonald's and Burger King and Popeyes. The older people can relate to having gardens in the backyard to make food because maybe they couldn't get food somewhere else. So it's digestible for a variety of people. I think you do a very well. You have a lot of great speakers, Sonia Sanchez, you know, Dick Gregory, Will Allen, a lot of Mark Lamont Hill, wonderful people in the field to support, you know, the film. So kudos. Kudos, Byron Hurt, for Soul Food Junkies. A wonderful, wonderful job there.
Thank you very much. Well, you know, I had a lot of help. I had a really great team, you know, who helped me get this film done. I mean, this was my vision. You know, it was my idea from the outset, but, you know, I really couldn't make the film without really talented, wonderful people around me. You know what I mean? My executive producer is Stanley Nelson. My editor is Sonia Gonzalez-Martinez. And I had a great associate producer, Lisa Durden. And I had a really smart and knowledgeable advisory team, you know, who I would show the film to, you know, during various stages of the making of the film. And they gave me a lot of feedback, you know, good feedback and constructive criticism, you know, that helped us, you know, turn the film into something that was going to be, you know, as powerful, you know, as it is. So, I mean, I didn't do it alone, you know. I mean, I'd like to take more credit for it, but I definitely did not do it alone.
Well, let me mention to the audience that you're on Twitter. They can follow you at Byron Hurt. Also, check out his website, bhurt.com. And on his website, you can check out the link to the trailer for Soul Food Junkies, which I've tweeted, and Facebook and LinkedIn and so on and so forth. And also learn about his new film, Hazing, which we'll be talking about in a few minutes. But let's get back to Soul Food Junkies. I want to talk to you a little bit about my food history. I grew up with some black hippie parents. And I was eating, we didn't have sugar in my house. The cereal we had in my house was like Cheerios, shredded wheat, oatmeal. Okay?
How'd you feel about
that? I didn't know anything. Well, okay, I felt odd because the other black kids around me, you know, they were eating a different type of food. Like Frosted Flake was like, that was like gold. Like I couldn't, Frosted Flake or Captain Crunch or, you know, and the only time I would eat soul food is at my grandparents' house. Or my, like, aunts or uncles, and that was just, like, heaven.
Okay.
That was like, it was like the light was shining, you know, like, go down the long hallway and there's a light at the end of the tunnel. It was like, because that, you know, didn't happen, you know. So food, and you talk about this in the film, brings so many feelings and this warmth and comfort and goodness and sharing. You know, it was happy memories around food. Food wasn't bad, you know what I mean? But I think what saved me was having this difference, balance of two different, I guess, if you want to say, food cultures in my upbringing. Because now my daughter, she won't eat canned vegetables. She's a food snob. She's a food snob. I said one day, we were poor. We were struggling. I had some canned stuff in there. I don't usually, but I had some. She was looking at the thing, picking at it when she was little, I can't let her. I said, what's the agreement? Eat that food? No, they're not going to can. You know, so it's like funny. You know, it's funny in a way. But let's get back to the feeling.
You know what?
I
think
about.
That's something. Yeah, but I mean, I think with your daughter, I think that's something that you should feel proud about because it's a sign that you've done something right and you're doing well in terms of training her about, you know, what constitutes real food and healthy food. I mean, if she was really, 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 really hungry, she would eat those canned beans regardless.
Oh, definitely.
You know, but, you know, I think that's the direction, you know, that we have to go. And I'm trying to same messages. My wife and I are trying to give those same messages to my daughter, you know, who's 3 and a half. You know, we're trying to teach her and give her a foundation of what is real food versus what is not real food or what is processed food. So, mm-hmm. you know, I think it's important, you know, that your daughter is somewhat of a food snob. You know, I would say she knows good. Yeah, she just knows, you know, she knows what's right, you know, and what's not so right. You know, not that you were feeding her something that's, you know, bad for her, you know, but, you know, I think that's a good way to start, you know, it's a good foundation. But, you know, food is definitely something that makes people feel good. You know, I've been showing this film around the country, all over the place around the country. I'm on my way to a screening right now in New York City. And, you know, one of the things that comes up all of the time is that when it comes to black people and food, and of course, you know, black people are not the only people who enjoy soul food, but, you know, it's like there are not a whole lot of areas in our lives where we can control things, right? And food is one place where we have a lot of control over what we put into our bodies and what we can enjoy, and nobody can really tell us what we can do or what we can't do. And I think, you know, for a lot of people, you know, soul food brings back all sorts of memories about their grandparents and their aunts and their uncles and good times, you know, during holidays and celebrations and, you know, good moments in their lives. And we also rare, you know, soul food because of, you know, how it enables us to survive through very, very difficult times. And so
yeah,
I think
you need something to stick to your ribs. Something to stick to your ribs, that's the issue. Like people always say, oh, that hippie food, those things. That's not going to stick to your ribs throughout the day, and you working and struggling and walking and you know and all these things. So you need something to stick to your ribs. Well, unfortunately, the food sticks to your ribs and then gets into your colon and gets into your heart and your vessels and clogs things up. But one thing you do talk to people about in the film is there are alternatives that you can have the same foods but made with less salt, less sugar. And the focus, I think Michelangelo Davis was talking about how, you know, now it's a lot of industrialized soul food, whereas before people had the gardens and the food, and your uncle had the garden, and the food was fresh. So that's a big difference. Fresh food versus processed packaged food is a big difference, you know, and that you can eat these foods. You can still have baked chicken. You can have collard greens. You can have mac and cheese. You can have a lot of different things, but it's just the way they were made and prepared is the key.
Yeah. That's the adjustment that a lot of people have a hard time making, you know, and people really don't want to sacrifice, you know, what they consider to be taste for health. You know what I mean? And I think a lot of people, based on, you know, my interaction with people around the country, a lot of people just don't really know how to maintain what it is that they love to eat, but cook it in a much more healthy fashion. You know? I think people really struggle around that. So I think people, they need more information. They need to be able to see, you know, how they can prepare some of their traditional foods in ways that are healthier so that they can keep enjoying it without sacrificing taste. And, you know, who am I to say that you can't eat the food that you love? You know, I mean, my role or my job as the creator of this film was to get people to think and to motivate people and to inspire people to be open to the possibility of changing and doing something different. And one thing that I do know is that change is very, very difficult for most people to do. But, you know, people need encouragement, they need awareness, they need motivation, they need models of people who are doing it and who are looking good and feeling good and, you know, all of that stuff. So, I mean, it's possible. I mean, I've done it. I mean, look, when I grew up, I used to eat all kinds of stuff I don't eat today, all kinds of stuff from pig feet, you know, to pig knuckles and all kinds of stuff that I used to eat. I mean, I used to work at McDonald's. I used to work in McDonald's. I used to bring McDonald's home for my family, you know, almost nightly. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, junk food, onions and corn chips and, you know, Hostess cupcakes and all of those different things. I used to eat all that stuff, all the stuff you see in a store, now and later, and those green and red, you know, quarter waters and all of that kind of stuff.
Oh, my God. You bring it back now and later?
Yeah, I mean, you know, now and later. So, I mean, I know firsthand that change is very difficult, but I also know that change is very possible. You know, and you just have to be
and
open.
Change is
I can't
important.
Make anybody change. Change is important.
Yeah, you can't make
you know,
it.
It's
you can't
very
make
important.
It, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can't make anybody change. And I like the fact on the film, this one guy was like, you know, you can't be up on my plate. Like, you don't be trying to be like police, you know, police or something,
right.
You know.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
you when you get in people's world about something that's so entrenched, again, it's not just about the food. The food is a representation of so many other things. So that's why I think when you approach people about their food, they get resistant. They're defensive automatically. You know what I mean? But
yes.
Let's move
and
on.
That's how
let's
my father was.
Bit.
My father
that's how
was
your father
defensive.
Was, yes.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I wanted to give you some time to talk about hazing because that's a very important topic also. And I think that people, again, you have a history of doing wonderful work and enlightening people and giving them information. Again, the choice is theirs, but you are giving them information in a digestible package. And hazing is another opportunity for you to do wonderful work. So talk to me about hazing, what this film is, why you think it's important to be made.
Well, you know, hazing is going to be my next documentary film, and my goal is to make a film that takes on this topic in a seminal way. I want to make a film that's going to really get people to think and to feel emotionally about the topic and the issue of hazing. I'm in the early stages of making this film. And I'm trying to raise money for it right now. So if people want to help me get this film done, they can go to my website, beheard.com, and make a donation. Just click the donate link on my page, or they can go to indiegogo.com/hazing to make a contribution to help me get this project off the ground. But I was really inspired to make this film, when I learned and heard about the hazing death of Robert Champion, you know, the young brother down at Florida A&M who was killed during a hazing ritual. And then there was another story that I read about a young man. He was African American. Well, his mother was from Africa. She worked really, really hard to get him into really good schools, and he was a student at Cornell University. I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
He was taped in the chair, and
it was alcohol poisoning.
Yeah,
and
he threw up.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and he was abandoned. He was abandoned by his fraternity brothers. And there are other issues out there, you know. And they're not exclusive to fraternities or sororities. I mean, we know that these kind of acts of hazing happen in high schools. I mean, it was a huge case that just broke a couple of weeks ago. I believe it was Bronx Science High School, you know, where a couple of track athletes have been alleged to, you know, haze another one of their teammates. You know, the military has, you know, all sorts you know, acts of hazing. So does the athletic world. You know, I mean, as an athlete, you know, I had to go endure a hazing act when I was a freshman in high school, a sophomore in high school.
Byron,
so,
why don't you just briefly tell people what is hazing? Why don't we break it down? Because people have different visions.
Okay.
You know, but let's just talk about some specific things that hazing entails.
Well,
I think
a loose definition of hazing is, you know, when you subjugate someone to humiliating or demeaning or degrading acts, which may include emotional and physical abuse. Okay, in order to gain social acceptance into an organization or an institution. That's my loose definition of hazing. I'm sure that there's a much more elaborate definition out there. But I think what differentiates hazing from bullying, for example, is that bullying oftentimes is involuntary. But hazing, for example, you know, people voluntarily subject themselves to hazing in order to gain acceptance. And when people push back from hazing, you know, the consequences can be really, really severe. I mean, there could be a lot of, social
people are ostracized.
You know, people are made to seem as if they are the problem.
You're weak.
And so there's
unworthy.
There's a code of silence. Yeah, unworthy, not good enough, weak, or what have you. So there's a really huge code of silence around hazing that a lot of people don't talk about. One thing that I've noticed since I announced that I was going to make this film, Joy, is that So many people have been emailing me, sharing me their stories about being hanged. I had a mother reach out to me and send me an email just last week. Very, very powerful, moving email from a woman whose son, high school son, had been hazed. And she talked about how it affected her son and how it affected the entire family. And so this is an issue that hit home to a lot of different people.
I was afraid of hazing. I was thinking, oh, you know, maybe I'll be in a sorority. When I was in college, I was president of the African American Student Union, and I was a coordinator for like all the areas, student unions, and different things. But I was like, I'm not drinking all that alcohol. I'm not staying up all night. I'm not doing this crazy thing. I was all these. I'm not. I was very much a loner. I guess I still am a loner. But I was like,
yeah.
Golly, like I know this girl. I know girls at University of Penn talking about alcohol poisoning. Girls, they don't even drink. That's the first thing. They don't even drink. Period. But they had to drink to get into the sorority. Boys getting beat down, like bad, like basically jumped by a gang of guys to get into fraternities.
Right.
You know, just and then messing up people's academic lives. You know what I mean? For the hazing process. Now, I think there's something to be said for pushing people and challenging people and finding their limits in a healthy way. In a healthy way.
Yeah.
But like you said, degrading and putting them at risk and not having any safety protocols, like leaving that boy in a room or, you know, hanging them upside down or all kinds of unsafe things, that's where the line. But who decides the line? You know, it's like I'll give an example of female genital mutilation. In France, they were going to pass a law saying, you know, well, the doctors could give an honorary cut. Well, who's deciding how big the cut is? You know what I mean? Who decides the line for hazing, Byron? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, that's a good question, and that's what I hope that my film will explore. That's what I want to explore in this film. So I plan on talking to some of the best people in the country who can shed light on this issue. You know, I'm with you. I mean, I think that there, you know, I think I do value rites of passage and, you know, an experience where people have to sort of, you know, be pushed and be challenged, like you said. But I do think there is a line. And I think we have to talk about the line, you know, like where the lines become blurred, you know, because oftentimes, you know, some of the more subtler forms of hazing turn into bigger forms of hazing. You know what I mean? And some of it, you know, and I know a lot of people would disagree with me, especially a lot of people, you know, in, you know, fraternities and sororities, you know, who embrace and support, you know, all forms of hazing, right? Except for maybe some of the more extreme cases where people, you know, die. But, you know, it's like, okay, so you have, if you're in a relationship, right, you're in a heterosexual relationship or even a homosexual relationship, it doesn't matter. And the power dynamic is such that, you know, there's physical abuse in that relationship. Well, 9 times out of 10, that relationship didn't start out being physically abusive, right? It was a process.
No.
And it was a process that began with breaking an individual down, you know, with emotional abuse, right? You know, and making that person feel unworthy or that they are somehow
less than
but deserving of being physically assaulted because they're just not good enough. They didn't measure up or whatever. And so
it's like that
is part of the process. That's part of the process a lot of times, you know, with hazing. And a lot of people don't want to talk about that because I think a lot of people want to maintain or hold on to certain traditions that have been around for a long time. But
why are you stirring up the pot, Byron? Why are you stirring up the pot? Why are you trying to mess with the situation? You know, this is the problem. We got it fine. Everything is good here, and then you're going to try to mess up the pot, you know?
I'm shining a light on something that's been an issue and been a problem for a long time. And how many people have to be seriously hurt, injured, or die, you know, in order to be accepted into any organization, you know what I mean, or seen as worthy, or to derive
social benefit. Well, I think that's the key
right
there. How many people is too many people? I mean, I think our society values certain lives. Certain lives are valued more than others. You know, we'll say the young white lady who's killed in the army in Iraq is valued more than the young black lady who was killed in Iraq. That's just the way it is. You know, young black boys and Latino young women, brown and black kids in the neighborhood are not as valued as little kids in the school. I hate to say that, but that's just the way it is. So, but people are dying and being killed every day. So how many bodies and in what way are they being killed? Can we protect them? Can we avoid it? Can we still have high standards and push people to excel and be the best and feel proud that, you know, I'm in this group, that means I'm one of the best without hurting them? You know, how can we do that as a society, whether it's the armed services, fraternities, sororities, even being a doctor? You know, people have to stay up hours and hours at an end. They're really challenging
that
idea. You doctors need to stay up, because if you're sleep deprived, you can't make good medical decisions. You could kill somebody.
Yeah.
So,
and I mean, I've even heard that people who are studying to get their PhDs are, you know, experience a certain form of hazing. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Where they are really broken down, and, you know, by their advisors and you know, professors, you know, who really put them through a process. That's mentally and emotionally abusive.
Yes. Yeah. So where is the line? Where is the line? Well, hopefully your film, Hazing, will find out where the line is and how we cannot cross it, how protocols can be set up, and just shed a light on this situation some people are not aware of. Also, please, everyone, check out his Soul Food Junkies film. You can download on iTunes and Amazon. His website is bhurt.com. You can follow him on Twitter, Byron Hurt, at Byron Hurt. Byron, thank you so much, and good luck with your screening today.
Joy, thank you very much. And, again, if people want to donate to the project, go to indiegogo.com/hazing, or you can go to my website, bhurt.com. That's B as in boy, H-U-R-T.com.
Awesome. All right, you have a wonderful Saturday, Byron, okay?
All right, you too. Thanks for the support. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. I hope you guys had a wonderful time listening to Byron Hurt. We're talking about Soul Food Junkies, his film, and also his upcoming project, Hazing. Go to Indiegogo to support his hazing program, $25, $50, $100, whatever you got. Please try to help a brother doing. He has a history of doing wonderful, detailed, historical work, so it's not some fly-by-night guy. You don't have to be afraid that you're giving the money and he's going to go run off to Jamaica or someplace. He has an established history as a filmmaker doing documentary films, so you can trust to support him. Again, he's on Twitter, at Byron Hurt. His website is bhurt.com. We're giving away 2 copies of Soul Food Junkies. But you got to follow me at Joy Keys or become a fan on Facebook. Look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. Also, you can send me an email. My email address is SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. Also, I want to encourage you to get your colon cancer screenings. If you have a history of colon cancer, polyps in your family, you need to get your checkups. If you are 50 and older, you need to start getting your screenings. March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. It starts with your mouth, actually. And so Byron's film, talking about the types of foods that we eat and colorectal cancer, are connected. Eat your fruits and vegetables, exercise, lots of water, cut out that soda, low salt, low sugar. Doesn't mean no flavor. There are many things you can do to bring flavor to your food. You just have to educate yourself. Soul Food Junkies tries to do that. You guys have a wonderful Saturday. Thank you so much for listening.
Hi, this is Terrence Howard. My mother was the cornerstone of our family. She shaped me as an actor, a musician, as a human being. So when she was diagnosed with colon cancer, it was like our whole family got cancer. She died when she was only 56, so this is personal. Now, hopefully, my heartbreak is your wake-up call. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer, but you can prevent this disease. Screening finds precancerous polyps so that they can be removed before they turn into cancer. I've been screened. If you think that you're at an increased risk like I am, ask your doctor when to start screening. And if you're 50 or older, get screened. I don't have my mother anymore, so please, do everything that you can to stay around for yourself and for your family. Screening saves lives.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.